हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीमद्वैतगराधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavat Sandarbha, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarana 3, Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan, page 65. When Sattva becomes prominent, the Lord favors the devatas and sages. When Rajas becomes prominent, he favors the demons. When Tamas becomes prominent, he favors the yakshas and rakshasas. The Lord acts according to the dictates of time. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.1.8. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not partial to anyone. The conditioned soul is under the influence of the various modes of material nature, and behind the material nature is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But one's victory and loss under the influence of Sattva-guna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna are reactions of these modes, not of the Lord's partiality. Thus, black is not produced by Tamas, and red and white are not produced by Rajas and Sattva. By the last statement is indicated that the Surup Shakti is the ultimate cause. So this section then they're trying to bring out that all these everything's coming from the Surup of the Lord, the form of the Lord. The Lord's form is the source of all energies, of all forms, of all qualities, of all activities, of all results. Whatever there is, it's all coming from the Lord. We're used to the concept that there's the impersonal, then you get the personal. But it's the personal, then you get the impersonal. Right? So everything's coming from the Lord. So that the different colors, that Shiva is white, then Krishna, Brahma's golden, Krishna's black, it's not produced by the modes. See, everything here is produced by the modes, and that's controlled by the Lord. But the Lord's not controlled by that. Therefore, he's whatever color is his natural color. Shiva's whatever's his color, by the arrangement of the Lord. So all these things are coming from the Lord. The Lord is the cause of this. Right? Not the other way around. He's not controlled by. So even here is that when the different modes are prominent, then the different personalities in the universe, they become prominent. Right? But that's the Lord's arrangement. So he's not being favorite. There's no partiality. It's just a matter of when Sattva comes up, then the devatas do well. When Rajas comes up, the demons. And when ignorance comes up, then the yakshas and rakshasas do well. So it has nothing to do with the Lord's partiality. It's just that this is how it's arranged. This is how he's made it. All these qualities come from him. So as they transform in the material facility, then these things become prominent. Does that make sense? So he's above all these things. Yes.
So the Lord is always reciprocating.
Yes. Yes.
So it means the jiva he can not control his life, but have some direction in his life.
Yes, it means if you surrender to the Lord, then you're working under the internal potency.
Yes.
So then all the different transformations and everything are all favorable for Krishna consciousness. See, it's that we're never in control of the transformations of the energies. The energies do that. The Lord's in control of the energies, and the energies, they do what they do. So the internal potency does what it does, the external potency does what it does. So we're never in control of that. We can take part as an instrument in it, but we're not the control of that. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say, yeah, means, how do you say? Mother Jashoda is cooking for Krishna. So the cooking, the technique, the situation and all that, that's all controlled by the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis. Right? So that means that's controlled by Balaram. You know, how it works and all that. It's not that you go into the kitchen and cooking works one day. The next day you walk in and go, oh, it's not like that anymore, right? You know, it's like today, you know, if you want to take the potatoes and you put them in ghee, then they fry, you know. But then tomorrow, no, it's not the ghee. It has to be the water, you know, and then they'll fry, you know. So you know. It doesn't change. It's already controlled. It's already there. We can take part in the process, but the control of it and how it works, that's always under the control of the Lord. It's never... We the laws of nature, like scientists think I'm controlling nature. No, they're not. They're working with nature. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole thing. Is that there's this... idea, because of the impersonal, then they don't see the person, so they think they're in control. But it's not actually.
It's interesting, in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there are five factors mentioned of action,
right?
Who acts, and that the smallest factor is the Jivatma.
Yes. Yeah,
because everybody else is greater than Jivatma, and we think, it's us.
Yes, yes. Well, that saying by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You know, the most amazing thing is that the smallest thinks they're the biggest. So that's so with us, it means it is. Very obvious it's false ego.
It's like the Chihuahua principle.
Yeah, the Chihuahua, yeah. And they think they're so big and everything like that. So that's the thing. And just then we could say, well, at least I'm the smallest, then Krishna's smaller than the smallest, because he enters the heart of the jiva, and so then, yeah, so... On all accounts, then.
We're the middlest.
Yeah, we're the most commonest. The most ordinariest. Okay, so, therefore, then, because smartas and others, the impersonalists, they may take it that Krishna's black, therefore it's coming from ignorance, and Shiva's like this, and that. So they won't get getting ready for the... boardwalk in Tel Aviv. Let's just say what the...
Today is the day.
Okay. Does that make sense? So it's very important that everything's coming from Krishna. He's the origin. He's not controlled by anything. You know, it's just like, let's say, here, I've heard it said that, oh, Krishna wouldn't want to drink this milk. Because the cows are abused, so he wouldn't drink this milk. But then they're saying Krishna's controlled by karma. Because I'm doing it because it's a good thing or a bad thing. But Krishna, these are his cows. Why wouldn't he drink the milk? Just like the son goes to the school, comes back, he's been bullied at school and all that. Now the mother won't... Yeah, I don't deal with abused children. It's kind of like, you know, what universe are they functioning in? They're Krishna's cows. Of course he's going to accept their milk. The problem is whoever's dealing badly with them, they get a reaction. You know, so we project our concepts onto Krishna. But Krishna's the source of the potencies. He's in control of this. That there is a concept of morality, it comes from Krishna. The cows are important, that comes from Krishna. So we shouldn't then take our socio-political views and then project that on Krishna. That's called Aropya Siddhi. Or Aropya Bhakti, not even, or just Aropya in this case. You know, where's the Bhakti? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Because we can say, no, but it's the cows. Yeah, but then also they're into the health food stuff, and that's what the karmis are into. They're into green because the karmis are into it. You know, so where does Krishna come in here? So it's valuable to me, therefore I'm projecting it. You know, the Karmis are doing yoga. Therefore, oh yes, we can preach on the yoga thing. Yoga comes from India; it doesn't come from the West. So these are the problems that if we don't understand this point given by Jiva Goswami here, then we make these misinterpretations. Krishna is the source of everything. He's the one that establishes the standards. He is the measurement, not other things. So that's why this is important, because it turns our perspective around from the impersonal to the personal. Because what are we talking about? We're talking, oh, it's abuse, so it's general. We're talking about, ecology. It's general. There's no relationship with a particular plant. You know what I'm saying? And the people are complaining about the environment, right? To each other. They're communicating. How are they communicating? Right? By smoke signals? Carrier pigeons, maybe? No, on their smartphones. Where did that come from? Right? Soybeans? Right? So then, it's just talk. Nice that they're being careful in one way, but this whole thing is that they're in such a distinguished position. And therefore so empowered, entitled actually, to, give their opinion and look down their nose at anybody who's not doing the exact thing they're doing. Does that make sense? Right? They're keeping their cup from home that they take to the shop to get their coffee, because they don't want to waste the trees and all these things like that. But they're walking there on their Converse tennis shoes that are made out of rubber. Does that make sense? So they're protecting the tree, but then digging things out of the air. It's just like, where's the balance? So that's the whole thing, is that it's whatever they feel, it's what's important to them, whatever's the flavor of the day of the socio-political issue. And that's what's up. And then if the devotees take that and then project that on Krishna, but you have to understand, morality comes from Krishna. Natural, organic is important because that's Krishna's system. The whole world was organic up to maybe, 80 years ago? Like that? So before that, they didn't have a concept of anything else. Right? Then it's the Westerners who say, this is old-fashioned. Now we go with the new chemicals and that, and this is the real thing. Then, after about 20 years, they figure out that this is not working out very good. Then they start a thing about, then they sell all this stuff to the third world. Now the third world's doing all this. And then they step back as the first world, that we're the superior race here, superior culture, because we grow organic. It's kind of like they always grow organic. You sold them this stuff. You know what I'm saying? So these things come about because we're not accepting that the laws come from Krishna. Krishna's the origin. Therefore, organic's good because that's the way nature works. Krishna's in control of nature. That's how things are supposed to work. That's why it's important. Not because it's a modern issue. You know what I'm saying? And they say modern. How do you count modern? You can say it's contemporary today. I was doing that as a kid. Saving water. In the toilets in the West, the cisterns used to be quite big. So as a kid, I used to take a brick and put it in the cistern, because that reduces a liter of water. So every time you flush, so it's thousands of liters of water a year. I was doing that as a kid. Only now people are going, we got to save water. It's kind of like, why? You haven't been doing that, all along? You're only figuring that out now? It's kind of like, get with the program. As if we're on the cutting edge. And what do you mean? What are you talking about? All these things they talk about now, literally, we were doing them as kids. And then now it's the thing. It's kind of like, what are you talking about?
Well, someone has, the statistics says that the Western world has like 70%, 80% of the land for organic production, but they produce only some 20-30%.
Yeah, yeah. And the other places do more.
Yeah, less land, they produce more. The third world.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, like this, you can just go on and on and on about how it's not actually balanced. Why isn't it balanced? We're not saying that these points, these positions aren't good. You know, that you're living a more natural, more balanced life. These are good things. But why are they good? Because they come from Krishna. But you have to know how they come from Krishna. Otherwise, just say, it's from Krishna, and now I get into my political position. That's still bogus. It may be a nicer bogus, you know, pleasant bogus, you know, just like the difference between coming up to the house and there's a collie dog there, you know, how you say guarding it as opposed to a pit bull, you know, it's just, you know, a nicer dog, but still a dog. So we have to appreciate is that, yes, these things are there and they have value because of their connection to Krishna. And then how does Krishna go about it? That's then the standard. Otherwise, then, as the karmis change the standard, we change with it. And then what's the mean? Where's the independence? Where's the specialness? Then we're dependent upon them. Point is Krishna's independent. Therefore, all the standards that we may have, they have their value because they come from Krishna. And so you have to see it in that context. Is that something else? That's the whole point. So it's not just a fad that we do so we have some conversation to have with our friends, because otherwise we have nothing to talk about. You know? Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful. It's that Krishna being the source, that's why things are important. That's why there's piety and impiety, good activity, bad activity. It comes from Krishna, not us. Right. And then with time, people observe in nature that, oh, it should be done like this. But who controls nature? Krishna. So it comes from Krishna. So they figured out that you should be organic. That's because they observed Krishna's nature. And that's how Krishna made it. And they see it works better that way. But does Krishna get the credit? No. So that's the difficulty. Like that. Is that it has to start from Krishna. To be Krishna conscious means it starts with Krishna. Then you bring it to your position. Okay, as a beginning stage, you start from your position, because it means you're aware of yourself, but not really aware of yourself, because come in contact with devotees, you find out about we're the soul, not the body. Right? So now we become more aware, and then we understand the varnasha, what is our nature, what are we doing? And then we see all that in the context of seeing that connected to Krishna. Right? So that's how where we start from. But then the advanced stage means we see Krishna, and all this belongs to Krishna. All this works according to Krishna's direction. And therefore, where do we fit into this environment that's already controlled by Krishna? Does that make sense? So that's the difference. When we're doing karma yoga, like this, we're taking the situation we're in that we feel in control of, and it's our work and our position and our nature and our identity, and then connecting that to Krishna. Which is good. But in actuality, that environment we're in, the nature we have, the identity we have, the abilities we have, the work we can do, the results we can get, that's all controlled by Krishna. So for us, then it's just a matter of, this is what we can do to please Krishna. It's a different mentality. You understand? It's the same in that we're a servant. But it's not about, there's no identity that we're part of this material. We're just servants of Krishna. The material energy belongs to Krishna. Does this make sense? Or is this, we're talking like...
Yes, this makes actually perfect sense. And yesterday you mentioned that if we want to go, you know, into details, then Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha, he explains not only that there are three kinds of bhakti, you know, Aropa Siddha Bhakti, then Sangha Siddha Bhakti, then Sarup Siddha Bhakti,
right,
but also Kaitava and Akaitava, which is deceitful bhakti, and none of them accept it. Whatever it is, it doesn't, like you explained with the animals and, you know, the milk. And this is deceitful because it's on a higher level of consciousness, actually, if you look at it.
Yes, yes.
So that is rejected. And then three true kinds of bhakti, although, as you explained now, associated with bhakti. It's not bhakti in itself, but just we connect it. Then it is accepted, but we have to understand it's not the top level. It's not the Sarup Siddha Bhakti.
No.
It's a different category.
Yes, yes. So that's the idea, is that if you start with Krishna, then you can put these in categories. If you start with ourself, then the problem is it's going to be what's important for us is going to be the hierarchy. We're going to be the measurement.
Yeah.
Right? But it's actually Krishna's the measurement. Because we're using a measurement ourselves, we're going to use our body, a gross and subtle body. So that means the material energy. That means our measurement, you know, the miyate is external, is yoga and mahamaya. But if Krishna is the standard, then we're using yoga maya as the measurement, right? Because maya means how you measure. So is it about Krishna and then going out, or is it starting with us and going that way, or you know, fully just not even getting to Krishna? Yeah. No, that's very nice. It's very good. So that's that. We have to be careful of that. You know, like the emphasis on this, or like we discussed before, that too much emphasis on we're Westerners, we can't do this. But it's kind of like, so what is Western food, right? What is the Western food, right?
Bread.
Okay, but then but now if you're in, let's say, South America, they eat rice. You know. So then, you know, like that, you could say, well, okay, well, they're more east than America, so they're actually Easterners. But then China's more west than America, and so they're the actual Westerners. Real Westerners are the Orient. That's west. Bengal is east, the Orient is west, and, you know, America's from, you know, the Midwest. You know? In other words, a bunch of farmers, right? Like that. See, you're more east. You're so. So you know what I'm saying. So that's the funny part, is that it's that we judge it by our standard. Like we were discussing about the maps, the map I grew up with. You know, you have the world map. You have the, you know, the plant, the globe is flattened out. You know, like the orange with the cuts in it and all those things like that. America's always in the middle, and then you have Europe over here, and then Asia over here. You know, or this way. You know, if you're looking at it. Like that. But then when I'm going through Europe, it's slightly different. You know, the line is divided in the Pacific Ocean. So then you're going to have Asia and Europe, and then you're going to have the Atlantic and America over here. So it's the one that's out of the way. And who knows what it is, the China one, you know. Because they're the Middle Kingdom, right? So they're...
Sri Prahlad Prabhu, once he turned upside down the map, and he showed us that Australia, because those who are on the top of the map, you know, in just subconsciously they dominating, and then Australia is always down. So he turned it upside down and said, "Look, now we're on the top."
Penguins rule.
New Zealand and Oz, you know, like that. So it is like that, actually.
Yeah, it's just everybody. It's just you start from yourself. So. Because that's what we do. Krishna's so kind. It's a process in devotion. You start with yourself. But, as Prabhu's pointing out, you have to get rid of all the cheating religion. Because cheating is, I'm, let's say, doing Arupya Bhakti. Right? I'm projecting onto it my own desires. But I'm trying to say it's pure devotion. Or I'm trying to say it's even better than the standard. It means my being a Westerner and doing Western stuff, eating Western food, doing all the Western stuff and none of this Indian stuff is actually better than doing this Indian stuff that's imported, you know, the rest of the Hare Krishnas do. Because that is artificial. I'm being natural. What does that mean, being natural? You know, what does that mean? You know? So that's the difficulty, is that that's cheating. And then trying to present it. If you're saying, you know, I'm a Westerner and I'm really conditioned and really attached, so I don't like to eat anything else other than my food, and I can't relate to any other dress than what I'm used to dressing and all that. But, you know, it's like that. That's our fallen position. But we're trying. We're trying to do something. We try to chant. We try to associate. We try to, you know, these five main items, we try to do what we can. You know, and by Krishna's grace, we'll be purified and move toward. Then that's honest. Right? Now that's Arupya Bhakti, but that's in the pure state. That you'll advance. But the other one is cheating religion. Just straight up front cheating. Because they're trying to say it's better. They're trying to reduce the Vedic culture down to it's just India. And since India is just another country, then therefore, you know, if it's between America and India, of course America is better if you're American. But also, if you're Indian, generally it works that way also. But you have to be an Indian in America. So an Indian in America is superior than an American in America. Like that. But an American in America is probably superior to an Indian in India. Like that. But best is an Indian in America who's an NRI and then comes back to India and then can strut around and all that. Now that's like the pinnacle, right? You know, like that. Don't get better than that. Right?
So is the lowest an American in India?
No, it's a step up for them. Okay. It's a piety. It's a mitzvah, right? It's just piety. They're coming up to, you know, like that. So that's the difficulty, is that you reduce it down and then it's arguing over these kind of political platforms when, no, it's based on the Vedic culture. Maybe they're interpreting it not as great as it should be. But Prabhupada said, live elephant or dead elephant is still worth the same amount of money. Right? Because alive, it's an elephant, it does elephant stuff. And it's dead, all the bones, everything's ivory. And so it's valuable. So that's the whole thing, is that it's still valuable, because even though it doesn't have all the detail and all the fine, it still has the structure. Right? Yes.
Actually, Srila Prabhupada sometimes in his purpose he equates between Indian and Vedic culture. He means Vedic culture, but he was using the word Indian.
Yeah, he'll use Indian because it's still being followed. If you know what to look for, you can see it. And if it means understanding that, if you can see that, you can see that in the West also. They don't know they're following elements of Veda. But that's why it works. That's why they're pious. You know, just like I was reading the other day, you have what's called, in America, called the Boston Brahmins. Like that. So, different definitions are there, but basically it means they're the aristocracy of America. They're generally the established old rich. You know, or old families. So, in one sense, is that you expect them to be rich, but basically it can't just be any rich. It has to be those who come down from families that were in America before independence. So, if your family had landed in America before 1776, and you're also in this wealthy, then you would be a Boston Brahmin, technically. But I'm sure that there are some that, you know, they have the culture, maybe they don't have the money, or so, whatever it is, it'll be a little great. So then, but I was reading, one of the things is in their culture, the part of their identity is they've given charity. They support charitable things. It's just part of what they have to do to be a respected Boston Brahmin. Right? If they don't give a charity, in other words, they always have these charitable events, you know, they $1,000 a plate, everyone shows up and this and that, and, you know, somebody speaking or some program and all that, and they all show up with the family. They have to be there because it's part of their scene. You know what I'm saying? So, giving in charity is inherent in their community. So that's a Vedic thing. They may not know it's coming from Veda. They're doing it maybe because they're a good Christian or whatever it is, or it's just a nice thing. But the point is it comes from the Veda. That's why it works. That's why it's pious. That's why people accept it, that this is good. You understand? So all knowledge is value. It comes from the Veda. Okay. I thought all the boys were out on Parikram. A few escaped. Oh, there's a whole bunch of them. There's more. Okay.
we don't have this in the West.
Huh?
We don't have something like that in the West.
No, no, you don't have that. Longer is just bounding through your lawn and all that. You get squirrels in the West, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a very clear thing is that if we're on the lower level, that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakura makes the point is that one should be contemplating where one is, where one is in Shraddha to Prema, where is the actual position, what you have to do to improve that, where the strengths and weaknesses are. You know, so then you understand what kind of bhakti you're performing and how to improve that. What's the standard? And how to move forward in your position towards the standard, which is what was it?
Sarup Siddha Bhakti. It's basically nine processes that Prahlad Maharaj mentions. That's the direct.
Okay.
Everything else is associated or just ritual which we want to connect.
Connect, yes. Like that. So in other words, one, you're taking religion and connecting it to Krishna, but you're starting with a religion, not starting with Krishna. See, it's like Arjuna, he's a Kshatriya. That's not working out, so therefore he wants to go to the forest. You know? Like that. Yes, Kshatriyas can go to the forest, but when they're a little older. Right? Not at this point. Not because they're frustrated in battle. And so then he's starting with themselves. And so then Krishna starts there, but he points out that there's a spiritual standard, and then he starts with, after pointing out there's spiritual, you're not looking at it from the standpoint of just religion. Then he starts karma yoga by taking religion and connecting that to Krishna. Right? Then he takes knowledge, connects that to Krishna. Then the combination of the two, because it's better to use your brain and do an activity. Right? Like that. So, yeah, and then it should be done connected, absorbed in Krishna. So therefore, I'm doing my activities with knowledge, you know, remembering Krishna. So that's Buddha Yoga. Then he points out all the fine details of that in the next cantos of how the modes are working and the divine mentality, demoniac mentality, all these different things like that. Then having done all that, then he explains, you know, whatever is there, and then he brings it to this point about, well, there's the aspect of what do you call it? Sannyas and renunciation, right? So renunciation means starting with karma, jnana, and jnana yogas, then bringing it to Krishna, right? Because that's a religion, whatever it is, your position, varnashram, your charity, your good work, your what do you call it? Upakar, you know, your welfare work, you know, like that. So these things are then all considered, connected to Krishna. That's renunciation. I do it for it's my thing, and then I give the results to Krishna, and it's glorious. But higher than that is sannyas, where it's all Krishna's anyway, and I'm just taking part as an instrument in Krishna's work. So Krishna ends the Gita with that one. You should therefore just surrender to Krishna and then engage in activity. Right? Rather than you're doing your activity and then here and there you kind of connect it to Krishna. Right? That's the beginning. Right? Does that make sense? So then these nine processes come from I'm doing things connected to Krishna, but from my standpoint. So it's bona fide, right? I'm doing the nine processes. But I'm only seeing the nine processes basically in the temple, you know, or in the direct activities. But in the indirect activities, I don't see, so therefore I give some money to Krishna, or now and again my house, I do some program devotees come to, you know, like that. The family's taken to the temple. But it's all in connection with the direct activities. I don't see the indirect generally connected to Krishna. Right? Because it's just a ropey, it's just myself and that. And then when you get into the Sangha Siddha, then you're going to, by that association, now you start to do those things connected, start to see. Like here, we're associating with the Acharyas. And we're starting to see according to this vision. They see according, that's just the way they see. We have to sit here and, you know, discuss it over and over and over again. They just see like that. And so then by association, we're able to appreciate, and we're starting to see how it branches out into more. Therefore, that position is better for preaching. Because I can see everything connected to Krishna. right? And then the Sarup Siddha, then you just see yourself as servant of Krishna. You're servant of the Vaishnavas. So that is the position. And then coming to that point where it's only about Krishna, that brings you to this position of Sarup Siddha. Right? Because it doesn't say Sarup, it says Sarup Siddha. Right? Because Sarup just means your spiritual form. But unless you engage that in Krishna's service, what's the point? If you don't engage this one, what's the point? If you don't engage that one, what's the point? It's just a better engagement, right? It's just like, let's say I have a Fiat. I don't use it to drive to the temple. But I have a Mercedes. I don't drive that to the temple either. So then, what's the point? They're both useless. Does that make sense? So Siddha means then you're seeing it in, it's exclusively about Krishna. So in other words, Sarup Siddha Bhakti, it's exclusively about Krishna, under the direct, in the association of the Vaishnavas. Right? Then Sangha Siddha Bhakti will be, it's in the association of the pure Vaishnavas, but it's not necessarily always about Krishna. And we may not, and we're not situated in our Sarup. Does that make sense? Like that. We're situated in the Sarup in the fact that I'm servant of Krishna. And we can see that basically consistently, but we don't see beyond that. And then the Aropya will be the I see myself, and now and again I remember Krishna, I do things for Krishna, and then now and again I'm not so absorbed in Krishna. But generally the general lifestyle, everything, and the association will be favorable. Right? You've cut out all things that are not favorable. So even if you're not Krishna conscious, you're still, cooking vegetarian things, you're offering to Krishna, you're taking prasad. Whether you're being more or less Krishna conscious, that's another thing. But it's favorable. The environment is favorable for Krishna consciousness. Is that, yeah? Okay? Okay, yes.
Can say a bona fide spiritual teacher is bringing the student to the surrender platform.
Yes, the platform of surrender.
And all these steps.
Yes.
The student needs to understand. Because it seems that Arjuna is very quick to understand.
Well, the main thing is to understand is surrender to Krishna. So even if you don't know technically all these steps and all that, but you're trying to surrender to Krishna, you will naturally go through these steps. Right? Because it's focused on Krishna, that pure sentiment to please Krishna. But if we're getting all technical in our life, then why aren't we engaging this technicalness in Krishna's service? Therefore, we must know the technicalness of devotional service. Otherwise, why is it we only know the technicalness of, whatever's the latest fad in self-help or in management? Why is it that's the only one that we know all the technical stuff? So why don't we know it in these other things? It's just like we can say about how this and that, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and it's bad for health and all this, but where does that come from? Why is it like that? Because Krishna's there, but we're not seeing it connected to Krishna. So what credit we'll get? Like we were saying, you're worried about the cows because they're abused, and so therefore we have nothing to do with the cows because we won't take their milk, because they don't have a goshala, they're not trying to take care of the cows there, they're not giving in charity to any goshalas or gosadans like that. They're just avoiding cows. How is that service on any level? Where's the service? I'm doing service by having nothing to do with them. I'm serving the Vaishnavas by completely staying out of their way. Yeah, how does this make sense? That's what we're saying. When you root it in the modern political positions, it makes sense to karmis because they're not very well versed in these kind of philosophical things. But for devotees, it makes no sense. So that's the whole point. Is that it's just where's the service? You can try to say as point out as no, but but cows are domesticated. They're eternally domesticated. You have to understand is the karmis. They don't believe that they're domesticated. They believe that it's an artificial thing. But if it's an artificial thing, where are the wild herds of cows naturally moving around in the ecosystem on the planet? There are none. But they don't see that. It's not that we're going to the jungles of the Amazon and going in there and then harassing the cows and getting the milk. And then if, you know, people just wouldn't go into the jungle, then the cows would, you know, do very nicely there, very comfortably. You know what I'm saying? There is that Krishna made cows, he made vaishyas to take care of them. Just like when he made people, he made the kings to take care of them. It's just the way it is. So they're in their own category. Yeah, don't bother the humpback whales. Okay, that's cool. You know, because it's not like they're moving around in human society or something. But cows are different. We just project the same thing, you know, save the tree, save this, save that, you know, so. So there's no service. There's nothing done. But in illusion, we'll think I'm doing some great service. So where's the upakar? Where's the welfare work for them? And where's the parama upakar? You take that milk offered to Krishna, now that cow gets the same spiritual benefit as you offering it. So therefore, you want the cow to get benefit. Be sincere in making the offering. And how sincere you were, that's how much bhakti credit that cow will get. You know, and then of course, because, you know, we won't accept them. Oh, but how do you know which cow? It's, you know, it's all the milk is mixed together. It means all those cows that it's mixed, whatever cow milk is in there from whatever cows, they all get benefit. You know, why do we have to find fault? So then that benefit is there. That's para upakar. The other stuff is not even upakar. It's just something to sit around and talk while you're in the city, you know, at your vegan restaurant. And how everybody else is a nonsense. It's not, you're not doing anything for the cows. In fact, Goshala is closed because of vegans. So, if a cow, since they're domesticated, where do they go? Now, does the farmer keep them as pets? No. You have to go to the fast food chain next door to appreciate the benefit then. You know what I'm saying? So it's the sentiment is nice, but the application is totally wrong. That's the problem. So that's why you have to understand it starts from Krishna. It's starting from Krishna. Therefore, then you can get the proper balance. Then you can get the proper balance. So, Devaki indicates this with reverence, right? Mm-hmm. That form which they say is invisible, the cause of all causes, the greatest, self-manifesting, without qualities, without change, pure existence, without variety, and without action, is directly you, the Supreme Lord, who manifests our intelligence. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Devaki said, my dear Lord, your eternal forms like Narayana, Lord Ram, Sesha, Varaha, Nrisimha, Vamana, Baladev, and millions of similar incarnations emanating from Vishnu are described in the Vedic literature as original. You are original because all your forms as incarnations are outside of this material creation. Your form was existing before this cosmic manifestation was created. Your forms are eternal and all-pervading. They are self-effulgent, changeless, and uncontaminated by the material qualities. Such eternal forms are ever cognizant and full of bliss. They are situated in transcendental goodness and are always engaged in different pastimes. You are not limited to a particular form only. All such transcendental eternal forms are self-sufficient. I can understand that you are the Supreme Lord Vishnu. We may conclude therefore that Lord Vishnu is everything, although he is also different from everything. This is the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. Right? So he is everything, so therefore we have to see everything in context with him. Same time, he's not everything because they're his energies, and then we can use those in his service. Right? Because otherwise we just see the oneness, then where's the interaction? Where's the relationship? If we only see the difference, then what's the basis of the relationship? How do we define it's all connected to Krishna?
So for that, we need to accept that Krishna is a person. We need to accept that Krishna is the Supreme Person.
Yes, the Supreme Person. And the person is the origin of all energies. And all attributes, and his transcendental, the modes, all these different things. That when that's accepted, then these other qualities don't come up. I can't make the mistake of projecting on Krishna my qualities, my perspective. Like that. So Krishna has his own. He likes to do certain things like that. And so that's the way he likes. Does that make sense?
We need to change our perspective.
We need to change the perspective, yes. So that's the thing. It's the change of perspective that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and we're his servant. And then natural position is service and that interaction between ourselves and Krishna. So when that's accepted, then the whole process works. So all the different discussions in that are to convince us of this fact. And all the different discussions about, you know, the positions, the Abhideya approach, are so that we know how to engage our whatever situation we're in connected to Krishna. So point is to seeing that everything is connected to Krishna, and then how that culturally connects to Krishna for his satisfaction. So that's the acharyas give us. So we're using our culture to please Krishna, okay, but are we using the best of our culture? Right? You're saying, okay, if I have affection for someone, I want the best for them. Right? So then, am I offering the best? Even I'm saying, okay, we're Westerners, we just do Western stuff. Am I offering the best of the Western things to Krishna? Yeah. So that's the whole thing. Let's say back in the 70s, it was a very common thing. After they, you know, especially if they got these nice altars from India, the wooden ones, the carved ones and all that, like that, then they would put gold leaf on them. Okay? Now, in the Western tradition, in churches and all that, at least in your, let's say you're Catholic and your Orthodox and all that, they like to gold leaf things because it's God's and you want the best for God and gold's the best and so therefore you put it on things. It looks good, it's valuable, you know, like that. So you're giving your best. How many altars today are being gold leafed?
Being gold painted. There's even one temple that used to be gold leaf that now is gold painted because the gold leaf chipped off.
Ah, okay. Yes.
What to do?
Progress. You know what I'm saying? So are we offering the best? And you say, oh, I like to eat but this, but are you offering the best of the Western cuisine? Are you dressing the best that the Western dress has to offer? Then if not, then how is it about Krishna? Then it's just about yourself. That would be like, let's say your friend is having his wedding, you know, it's at a very big formal, you know, church, everyone's invited, you know, it's naturally, it's a black tie event like that, and you show up in your jeans and t-shirt, you know, and even that, the jeans have been cut off, so, if we're not getting too avant-garde here, you know, because that makes an endeavor, you have to actually cut them off, so probably they bought them, right? Yes.
Maharaj, in these big South Indian temples, actually you're not allowed inside if you wear this type of...
Yeah, you just can't go in. I mean, some of them, like Trivandrum, you can't go in if you're wearing sewn cloth. Yeah. If you have a kurta, you have to take it off and just use the chadar and dhoti. You can't go in otherwise.
Most of the Kerala temples.
Yeah, okay, most of the Kerala temples. Oh, so Padmanabha also.
One you can't even wear. If you have your chadar, you have to wear it around your waist.
You can't have it up. Because around the waist means servant. That's the very formal. Bengali is the same thing. You can wear it around the waist, but you also have the thing is just hanging it around the neck or just hanging it on one shoulder. That's also considered that same kind of move. So Bengalis would generally have one around the waist and one on the shoulder around the neck like that. But South is just around the waist. So even if they had to, they have the waist one and then the shoulder one, they take off and put it around the waist. They'll put them both there. That's the position of service when you're working within the majesty. So that's how it's expressed. So are we offering the best? So that's the thing is then it's about Krishna. So I show up at this wedding, you know, black tie event, you know, in my t-shirt and flip-flops and cargo shorts because, well, I'm comfortable in this. This all is artificial and all that, you know. We're Westerners. We don't do all these things, right? It's kind of like why don't they just say, I'm attached to living like this. I can't relate to any other cultural culture than what is within, you know, a 5 mile radius of my house, you know, and whatever I ate, my mom fed me as a kid, that's all I can relate to, and that's it. So basically I'm xenophobic, but because I'm also modern and liberal and educated, I can't say that I'm xenophobic, because that wouldn't go down well at all, because then I end up like Nazis and other things like that. So therefore, I'm just going to come up with a philosophy to try to prove that I'm okay. But the whole point is no, if you're saying Western, then it has to be according to the place. It has to be according to the situation, because that's the way it works. You know, any gentleman, that's why he has that suit thing. Because he has, and they're different suits and different things. So he's going for some program. Okay, so he goes to business things, he wears the business suit. But then in the evening when they all go out to the dinner, he has to wear a dinner jacket and all that. Then they're going to go golfing. He's going to have to wear those outfits. And then they might even go out on somebody's yacht, so he's going to have then that's when he'll have the cargo shorts and the polo shirt. But it'll be Ralph Lauren.
It costs just as much as a suit.
Yeah, it costs just as much. You know, maybe Gaunt, you know, something, but whatever it is. He bought it at Brooks Brothers. Like that. You know, so it costs as much as a suit. So that's the whole thing, is that they know how to dress according to the occasion, and they look good on all of them. So they're looking their best. So like that. But this idea is that, no, we're Westerners, I just do this, so I'm going to show up for you know, giving class in the temple in my shorts and t-shirt, and then I'm cool. Right? And that's in France? It's like, on no level are Americans cool in France. There's not one level at all. Right? Even if they were sweeping the streets, they would say he still looks like a slob. You'd want the cleaner guy to, you know, sweep the street. You know, he's wearing, got full pants on. You know? So, and then we're going to show up at the temple like that, and then we're going to give Bhagavatam class? How is that connected with I'm a Westerner? No, you're not. Westerners, they have some culture in their own, and they do these things. They go to a church, they dress up. That's where the Sunday best comes from. You wear your best. Like that. You don't just go in t-shirts and all that. So that's the problem. So we have to understand is that these forms and all that, they're all self-sufficient. They're chinta beta beta tattva. It's non-different from Krishna. So you're working with Krishna, not working with West. Even the modes of nature that produce the Western mentality and facility, that's still from Krishna's modes. It's not from something else. And so therefore, in that situation, yes, then you use that in Krishna's service. Prabhupada had no problem that they brought a Rolls Royce and he rode in that. Because they're giving the best to the guru. But at the same time, he had no problem riding around in this old converted school bus, you know, where there's a hole in the floor that they just put, I think, a mat over it like that. And there were no seats because it was an old hippie bus. They took out all the seats because hippies, right? Who uses seats, right? You know, except the driver. You know, and even that's only because, you know, he would sit in the lotus position, but the problem is he can't push the pedals, so, you know, he's just forced by circumstance to use it. But everybody else has the... And so they have to put a chair in there for Prabhupada. And he's happy to ride, because this is Krishna's bus. It's Krishna's, therefore it's glorious. Not because it's an old hippie bus, that's why it's glorious. So that's the whole thing, is that all these ranges, if we're talking about, yes, we're Western, we can only do Western stuff, then do the best. But if we just are attached to our own position, then understand, we're attached. That's the whole point. Know your level of advancement. Don't try to project that your low level of advancement is something, you know, like a Paramahamsa. Does that make sense? So it completely changes the whole approach. That's the whole thing. You know, everyone's still individuals. Krishna's still an individual. The circumstances are still what they are. But your approach to seeing it, that's what changes. That's what, like the Prabhu was saying, we're trying to change the consciousness. That's the only thing that's there. That's all we're trying to do. So that's why we start, whatever you are, start with that. And if it's favorable, maintain it. If it's not favorable, why wouldn't you adjust it? Yes.
The difficulty is not so much to join Kanchai Iskan, it's to go to the pure Bhakti.
Yes, yes.
Because there is a material desire, there is a position.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, making it that the big difficulty is the change into, a Vedic compliant lifestyle. But no, the actual change is pure Bhakti.
Yes, yes.
Because we've been going around and around and around in lifestyles that we've been Indra, we've been Brahma, we've been everybody. So we've done all the Vedic stuff, all that. That's not the hard part for us, actually. The hard part is pure bhakti. That's the tough part. And that's then it comes by association. So in association, our first interpretation is Aropya. Then the second one is going to be Sangha. We're going to try to do what everybody else does and try to take that mood, though we are not situated in our sarup. Then it will bring us to bhava, where we have our sarup, but it only becomes sarup siddhi when we come to the point of exclusively absorbed in Krishna. That brings us then to get that direct association, take part in the pastimes of Krishna in apandasa. Then that's sarup siddhi. And so that's Srup Siddhi Bhakti. That will bring us to Prema. Right? So Sangha Siddhi Bhakti will bring us to Bhava Bhakti. Aropya Siddhi Bhakti will bring us to Sangha Siddhi Bhakti. I mean, yeah. Does that make sense? So they have their progression. And then once you get to Prema, then then it just deepens and eternally. So one has to understand where it is what you're doing. Then it makes sense. Yes.
Sometimes also devotees, they say that karma yoga is aropa siddha bhakti and sangha siddha bhakti is jnana yoga, but actually it's not. They overlap.
They overlap. It's just a mess.
So it's not like.
No, to get a general idea, you can kind of see that, but then the problem comes is then we fix it. Because what's being explained in Bhagavad Gita is buddhi yoga. Not karma yoga, jnana yoga, and dhyana yoga. Those are the branches of it. So that's what you're putting together, is all the different things. And then you come out with that. So you it's buddhi yoga, that you're engaging your activity. So you can say is that someone on the platform of Asrup Siddhi Bhakti, their karma yoga is perfection. Like that. Because every activity is only for Krishna. All their understanding and knowledge is only for Krishna. All their absorption and meditation is only for Krishna. So, it's you can say is that someone who's situated only in, means someone who's in karma yoga, and that's all, and that's their position, then you may say that that's a neophyte. But the point is by performing the karma, then knowledge and detachment automatically come. So automatically they'll go to jnana yoga. But it doesn't mean that now their karma yoga isn't more perfect. Because now they see it all connected to Krishna, nicely connected to Krishna. They start removing all those things that are not valuable for Krishna. Like that, not valuable for the progress of the consciousness. You know, so that's the point, that's the advantage of following what's recommended by the acharyas, because basically nothing has to be dropped. It just gets more and more pure, more and more connected. But if we're using contemporary things and based on our attachments, then there's going to be stuff you have to drop. You know, it's like, you know, you like smoking your pipe, you got to give that up. You know, it's like, well, I could smoke oregano, you know, maybe, you know, but maybe not, you know. Black pepper? You know, it's just, these things go. Does that make sense? Yeah. But if you like smoke, then you can burn duna, you know, like that, and it's yeah. Bhagavan's purpose is bliss, right? So means because purpose means your goal, right? And so then his goal is bliss. So you have Satchitananda. So Ananda is the purpose. Right, so that means sat and chit. I mean, so sat means eternity. So there's existence of things. So then you're going to take those things that exist, and through chit, through knowledge and activity, you're going to engage them. But what's going to be the ultimate purpose is bliss. And bliss means it's connected to Krishna. Right? So for Krishna, everything's always going to be connected to himself, since everything is himself. So he doesn't have a problem. Krishna is always Krishna conscious. He doesn't have this problem. Let us return to the subject. The Lord's qualities are exceptional, astonishing enough to attract the Admaramas, right? So, in other words, to establish the transcendental attributes, we've gone off a bit into a tangent. It means it's all about Krishna, but emphasizing how all the qualities of the material world, all the different things, how it's all controlled by him because it's originally from him and all these things like that. So, we're talking more about his energies and his position and all that. We're talking more about the sat and chit platforms. Right? Though it's all him. So now, they say, we bring up Bhagavan's purpose as bliss. So now let's return to the subject, because it's about Bhagavan. Because that's actually, in Bhagavat Sandarbha, is the subject. Is how Bhagavan is the source of Brahman. How he's the source of everything. It's Bhagavan is that. The Lord's qualities are exceptional. Astonishing enough to attract the Atmaramas, right? They're transcendental, so they're already situated on the transcendental platform. But by hearing about and coming in contact with the Lord's qualities, they are attracted to the Lord, and they're not attracted to anything material. So that means they must be, we can understand the spiritual. Some sages who are Atmaramas, beyond the scriptures, false ego and rules, also practice unmotivated pure bhakti to the master of pure bhakti, Krishna, since he possesses qualities attracted to even them. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.10. Right, so we see right in the beginning, the first canto, it's already introducing all these principles. It's just taking you to a deeper level of bhakti than is given in the Gita. But it's the same principle. Then second canto, you're going to introduce all the mechanics of how Krishna is everything. But we're going to look more at the mechanics of it rather than just Krishna's the source. Right? So as we go along, then we start to more and more see how all this is coming from Krishna. Krishna's the origin of that. So the sages, you know, are beyond the scripture, beyond false ego, beyond rules. Why? Because the rules are there to control the false ego, to give some direction. But they're beyond because they spontaneously attracted to Krishna. So they're always going to do things pleasing to Krishna. Scriptures are saying what to do to please Krishna. So if you're doing it naturally to please Krishna, you don't have to follow the rules to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Is that just like, let's say, the child has a favorite preparation they like, right? And that preparation has a recipe, okay? So now, let us say the parents are out of town for some reason. And so the child happens to be, let's say, at the aunt's house, or the aunt's house, or whatever, however you want to say it. The auntie, yes. So she's heard that the kid likes this prep, so therefore for the birthday they're going to cook this prep. How are they going to cook this prep? By following the recipe. Right? It's because they know they like this, that's in the recipe, they follow the recipe, that's following the scriptures. That's sadhana. But now for the mother, then the whole point is, does she have to follow the recipe to cook the preparation? No. Is it because that's what it's like? No, it's because the son likes this, that's why she cooks it. So what she cooks matches the recipe. And the recipe matches what she cooks. But she's following it not because of the rules. She's following it because of devotion. So that's what it means. It's sometimes mistaken that, you don't have to follow the rules. Where we chant, we don't have to follow the rules. The point is, no, you'd be doing all the activities that are recommended in the rules spontaneously. But to not follow the rule and not be situated in spontaneous bhakti, that's called, I guess you'd have to say, vikarma yoga. You know, going against the rules, against the karma, you know. So.
Ah, yoga.
Yeah, vikarma, yoga. The non-yoga of not connecting it to the Supreme.
Yes.
Of activities not connected to the Supreme. Yes. Okay. Sukadev, the son of Vyas, whose mind became distracted from trance by the qualities of Krishna, and who became attracted to the Vaishnava, studied this great Bhagavatam, right? So he's an example of the Atmarama who's come to this. He becomes distracted from just that understanding everything is Brahman. So he becomes attracted from the qualities of Krishna because they're more attractive. His qualities are more attractive than just existence. Right? The existence, everything exists, but the qualities of everything, that's more important. Right? Yes.
Well, it's interesting, in the case of the Atmarama, if he's attracted to something, that means that's Krishna.
Yes.
In our case, it's...
It's kind of hit and miss like that. You know, you were doing this and your friend kind of goes, how does this connect to Krishna again? It's like, oh yeah. Yes. So that's what he means. The Sangha city, the Atmaramas, they're always engaged in Krishna service. If we're around them and just do what they do, then we're perfectly situated. Though we may not have that consciousness, but we're actually engaged in the activities of pure devotion, even though we may not be situated in pure devotion. Right? But we have the attitude of pure devotion that we want to be situated like that, so that's why we'll get credit. Yes.
That's why Jiva Goswami starts with the Sandarbha by discussing liberation. It's actually starting, bhakti starts beyond from the point beyond liberation.
Yes. Because everything exists anyway. Now, what do you do with it? That's what makes it bhakti or not. So that's why you see bhakti is the combination of sambit and ladini. Not Sandini. Because Sandini, it's existing anyway, so it's already included. But the focus is on what activity do I do with things that exist. Right? Krishna exists, I exist, the things I'm working with exist, so therefore how am I going to use that for pleasing Krishna? Ladini. I use the activity, Samvit, to please Krishna. Ladini. That combination, that's called bhakti. Right. So, yeah, Prabhu points out is that we've established Krishna as the source of everything, but that's not really where the bhakti discussion on bhakti starts. That's just the preliminary so that we accept that bhakti is eternal, like the Lord. Right? We're eternal, the Lord's eternal, bhakti's eternal. Otherwise, we're going to judge everything by our temporary, conditioning. So, yeah. By his power, the Lord is endowed with all good qualities and devoid of all faults. Fools say the Lord has good and bad qualities out of bewilderment. Right? But he only has good qualities because they all come from him. There is no maya or anything made of maya in the Lord. Right? There's no external energy. There is thus no maya in things related to the Lord. The world is not created by maya. It arises by the power of the Lord. Right? Because it's saying maya creates it, so therefore it's a separate thing. Right? You know, just like in the contemporary religions, then there's the devil. He has his own basically power, separate from God. Right? God made the world, lost control of it, now the devil controls it. But no. Where does maya get her? It's simply from Krishna. So there is nothing else. So if her energy is coming from Krishna, therefore how could she bewilder Krishna since Krishna is the source? Right. The world is not created by maya, it arises by the power of the Lord. Because the Lord is beyond maya, he's called supreme by the wise. Vishnu Dharmotra. This completes the explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam 8.3.3. Thus it is proved that the qualities and name of the Lord are completely different from those in the material world. Like this is that when you have this kind of a thing, then put as a footnote, put the verse. So that we can, because, you know, how you say? Because there's another verse that always takes prominence in all these studies. Like that's called Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Bhaya. So. I'm sure for those on the level of Jiva Goswami, they know perfectly this verse and everything and know exactly all the details. But for us, it's like 833. Is that the one about Vritra Sura? It's like, yeah. Yeah. Shamsaya. Here's the doubt. Accepting that the name, form, qualities arise from your sarup, since your sarup is perfect in itself, what is the purpose of your having these names, forms, and qualities? Right? Uttara. So the answer. lokapyaya sambhavaya. He accepts them for destruction and attainment. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.3.8. He accepts the forms for destroying samsara for the devotees and attainment of the devotees' happiness of bhakti. Sambhavaya means for attaining. It also means to give special happiness of bhakti to the nitya siddhas who have already attained him. Arjuna says, you appear in this world in this way, in your spiritual form, with a desire to relieve the burden of the earth and to give continuous happiness to your dedicated devotees by letting them worship you. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.25. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. It appears that the Lord is partial to his devotees. Everyone is related with the Lord. He is equal to everyone, and yet he is more inclined to his own men and devotees. The Lord is everyone's father. No one can be his father, and yet no one can be his son. His devotees are his kinsmen, and his devotees are his relations. This is the transcendental pastime. It has nothing to do with mundane ideas of relation, fatherhood, or anything like that, right? Because here we have relations because that's just how it works, biologically, socially, the communally, that's just how it works. But with Krishna, it's just based on rasa. It's just on how someone wants to serve Krishna. That's then how it comes, right? And so that's then how the community develops. That's why then these are the parents, these are the friends, these are the lovers, these are the servants.
Jesus said something similar.
Oh, really? What did he say?
His mom and his brothers, they were outside, and somebody told him, "They're outside. Don't you want to go and see them? These are your mother and brothers." And he said, "No, my real brothers are my disciples."
Yes.
Yes. This is my family. Yes.
Yes.
My devotees.
Yes. 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 Okay. As mentioned above, the Lord is above the modes of material nature. And thus, there is nothing mundane about his kinsmen and relations in devotional service, right? So, therefore, all his names in that, we see, is that what you say here? For destruction and attainment. Right, so by these names, then it destroys the false concepts that we may have. It establishes the position as the controller of the material energy, and that. But it also establishes the relationship with his devotees, and the pleasure that the devotees get in his association. So that's what the names are for. Because he being the source of everything, then he doesn't have a name, right? Because everything is him. At the same time, because a name means it's very specific. But these names are in connection with his qualities in relation to the devotees and relationship to the, you know, the creation, maintenance, and destruction. So his primary names, his secondary names. The meaning is this. Just as with other avatars and Purusha avatars, so this avatar, your manifestation as Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, appeared in order to relieve the burden of the earth, Bhuva, who has great bhakti, and to give happiness of worshipping you constantly, anudhyanaya, to the devotees, right? So to remove the difficulties that are there and establish the pleasure that devotees taste in service to Krishna. So, yeah. Okay, so next we go into another doubt. So we're clear here? So the pointing out is that all this is coming from Krishna, therefore you can't say specifically he has a particular name, but the point is all the names are coming from him for all these different purposes. And the purpose is bliss, that's obtained in the association of the devotees, interacting with the devotees. So therefore his names are to please the devotees, to protect the devotees and please the devotees. That's what they're there. And as a side thing, if you're protecting the devotees, you're taking care of everything else. Because you're pleasing devotees, you need an environment. So the environment is there because Krishna maintains the world. Then devotees have a place to perform their service. And it's a side thing, the non-devotees can also use it. Right? It's because they're all part and parcel of Krishna, so they all have their position to be there. But they just don't know how to use it in connection of Krishna. So as long as they use it in a pious way, then there's no problem. But when they use it in an impious way, that has to be corrected now and again. So therefore, he takes care of the obstacles, is the one side, and he then establishes the loving relationships with the devotees.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.